first walked in these front doors in 2004, I felt like I was coming home. I didn't know what I was looking for in a spiritual community, but I found what my soul was seeking. There is an incredible energy here that made me feel immediately comfortable, even though I didn't know anyone. I don't remember what the sermon was that day, but I do remember Jean Van Bronckhorst. She was a member who held a little orientation class for newcomers that day. I remember her joy and excitement and how she and the other people here obviously loved this place and each other. That day, I fell in love with this community and I didn't even belong to it yet. I've been thinking a lot about how the fellowship is more than any one person. Maybe some of you have been thinking about this too lately. It may be most obvious at a time when we have said goodbye to a beloved senior minister, the Reverend Roger Birchhausen, after 24 years of ministry, and are about to welcome the Reverend Christina Leon Tracy as our new senior settled minister. But this fellowship has always been more than the minister. Roger had to work on this throughout his long ministry. When he started in 1990, there were 100 members, and he was the only staff person. He was at every committee meeting. He came early to service to set up chairs. And everything that happened at that time could have looked like it revolved around him. But it didn't. Other than a 2-year extension ministry, the fellowship lay leadership had been doing everything up until that point, including planning and leading services. And they were still very involved in keeping this congregation running. And we grew. We got more staff, more programming, which meant more lay leaders. More people helping make decisions and keep the fellowship moving forward. If you ask a random group of Fox Valley citizens what they think of when they hear the words Fox Valley Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, some community members would say Roger Birchhausen, but many wouldn't. You would also hear that we are welcoming, that we're dedicated to social justice, that we've had a series of active ministers, that our people are everywhere in this community, from the public education system, to the libraries, the nonprofit sector, corporate world, social services, local musicians, local artists, it can go on and on and on. The fellowship started in 1955 with 9 founders and started chartering members in 1957. The membership book from that year states, "The purpose of this fellowship shall be to join its members into a religious and educational fellowship to develop human character and personal responsibility, to further individual freedom of belief, and to advance liberal religion through study, service, and spiritual consecration." I love this statement. I think it's a beautiful way of describing who we were, but also who we are. The last line of that purpose from 1957 includes 2 of the 3 parts of our current mission statement, in my opinion: growing in mind and spirit, and leading in social justice. And thinking more about who we've been and what has stayed the same, I've realized not only have we held true to many core values and ways of being, they have evolved. One of my favorite examples is the children's story today that Terry Dawson shared. He has been sharing Abiyoyo's story for many years, and I could not wait to have my son be old enough to hear the story and have it be part of his life, and today he got to act it out. So I'm on a high. Terry has always introduced the story in the same way. He learned it from Alan West, who learned it from Pete Seeger, who adapted it from an African song. Terry won't always be the one who tells this story, of course. And he is actually teaching Jay Thomas to take over for him, who unfortunately is in Japan this weekend, otherwise he could have done it today. I'm sure Jay will do things differently, as Terry does things differently from Alan. And I think this is one example of a beloved tradition that has and will change. There are, of course, examples of bigger things that have stayed at our core but yet evolved. And one of the values that is most important to me that we continue to uplift is being welcoming. If our 9 founding members and those that came after hadn't been welcoming for much of our history, we would not exist today. Like many congregations who started in what was called the Fellowship Movement in the 1950s. It's not always intentional, but it can often be because the people within the group want to stay like a family and they want to know everyone. Now, this is tempting, I admit. Many of us here have felt when we walk into a room in this building and don't know anyone, that's really hard. But thankfully, that feeling of being closed to newcomers never happened. Otherwise, most of us in this room would not have had a fellowship to join. While the spirit of our welcoming nature has stayed relatively the same, the process has had to change. It's a very different process for someone new when there are 30 people versus 300 versus the more than 700 we are today. In the over 11 years I've been in my position, I have tried a lot of new things, and I feel like we do a lot well. We are a very fast-growing congregation, which speaks to our welcoming nature, but also brings unique challenges. This next year could be one of the biggest years in the fellowship's history. But if we don't do some very basic things very well, we could easily lose the same amount of people. If people don't make friends and connections very quickly, they won't keep coming. No matter how good the services are, no matter how dynamic the ministers are. While I will never say that this is easy work, it is rather simple. I invite you to close your eyes if you're comfortable. Think about the first time you came to the fellowship. It may have been years ago. It may have been today. What were you hoping for when you first came? What did you experience? What would have made that experience better? I invite you to open your eyes. I was fortunate enough to take a month-long sabbatical this past February. A sabbatical is time away from your normal job to rest and renew, and also often a time for learning. The majority of my time was spent doing professional development, which included reading lots of books and articles and watching endless webinars. But I also visited several area churches. It was quite a learning experience, and I admit that I missed this place more on those Sunday mornings than any other time during that month. One of the churches I attended had been highly spoken of. I took my son, Nate. When we walked in, the director of Christian education, the staff equivalent to our Kim Hartman, our director of religious education, greeted us warmly. She paid special attention to Nate, which we both appreciated. We found the sanctuary and were handed programs from smiling ushers. After the service, we were invited to stay for treats, so we went to their gathering area, which was a beautiful living room type area with an array of homemade treats. Everything sounds pretty good so far. But at that point, And in the 5 minutes or so, we waited until I couldn't stand it any longer. Not one non-staff person spoke to us. I felt like the most visible, invisible person in the world. I don't have to tell you it was terrible. There was no doubt that we were new. It's a pretty small congregation, and we definitely stood out. And there were people there who could have said hello, but they didn't. I know this happens here. It might have happened to you, and you just relived that experience during the little meditation I had you do. But I want it to never happen again. And I need your help in making sure it doesn't. The staff and ministers here do our very best to make sure people have as good of an experience here as possible. But we're only so many people, and it's also critical that this work is done by everyone, not just those of us who are on staff. Having you all approach people you haven't met shows them that not only are there friendly people here, they can make actual friends. It shows them that they can find true community here. So I'm asking all of you to be on the lookout for people on their own. All you have to do is greet them by saying, "I don't believe we've met." We say this because they might not actually be new. They just may not know anyone at that point in time in that space. Ask them what they thought of the service. Ask them if they're involved in anything. Share what you love about the fellowship. Introduce them to someone else. I love the mission and vision statements that the board recently put out that I used as our reading today. And I feel like this is asking us to evolve some more. The pertinent part that I want to uplift again is, it reads, "Welcoming everyone. We will engage deeply in the challenging work of examining our own assumptions, biases, and privilege. We will reach out to each other and the wider borderless community with radical kindness and hospitality." This is much bigger than just saying hi to everyone who walks in the door. And when I first read this, I thought, that is a very big message in a very short statement. Let's figure out how we can do this. So I went back to some of my favorite quotes from the book called Radical Hospitality by Father Daniel Holman and Lonnie Collins Pratt and found this one. "Genuine spirituality is not cozy and seldom makes you comfortable. It challenges, disturbs, unsettles, and leaves you feeling like someone is at the center of your existence on a major remodeling mission, while affirming how wonderful you are, better than you really know. Spirituality is also meant to change you." I felt this way after being at the fellowship for a while. The opportunities for what my spiritual life could look like exploded from all of the things I learned here. I also read this quote. "When we create a life surrounded by people like us, it is a narrow life. We will not be challenged by such a life. A spirituality centered around such a life will be lazy and complacent. It allows us to settle for easy answers based solely on personal experience." That one hit me hard. I have absolutely been in a bubble for much of the last 10 years, and prior to that, in many ways as well. It's easy to explain it away. My work is all-encompassing. It's hard to find time to get away from my ministry here. And I love you all, and I love my job here. And I also need to make opportunities to get outside that lazy and complacent world, in Lonnie and Father Dan's words. I have had more than one reminder of this in the last year, with the lead up to the election and the aftermath since, as well as our local community's response to just hanging a banner that stated Black Lives Matter. And more recently, with the discussion of white supremacy. This has been a hard phrase for me, as it may have been for you, as I've been learning about the difference between white supremacists and white supremacy culture, I realize there is much I don't know. I included an article that has been helpful to me in the Weekly Scroll last week that lists characteristics of white supremacy culture. And as I read them, I realize I fit into many of them. The sense of perfectionism, the fear of open conflict, and individualism are just a few. This is the culture I was raised in, so of course it would be comfortable to me. Every school setting, my family environment, and all of my friends' homes feed into these characteristics. I think the one that's caused the most challenge is the fear of open conflict. This has affected many of my relationships negatively in the past, and I realize it still continues in my family of origin. It has been and will continue to be challenging to overhaul these tendencies, but I know it is essential for healthy relationships and for me to live in this world today. This work of learning about and fighting that culture is the genuine spirituality that is doing that major remodeling mission that I quoted earlier. Our congregation is being asked to give up some of our comfort by becoming a sanctuary congregation. While my staff portfolio does not include social justice, it does, of course, include welcome and radical hospitality of all people. So I jumped at the chance to be on the Shared Sanctuary Committee. The Fellowship was a sanctuary congregation in the 1980s, and it's hard to believe our political culture is forcing us to consider to do this again. While we don't know what kind of sanctuary we are going to provide, it could mean housing one or more people for an indefinite period of time inside of this building. This is not going to be convenient for us. It would mean asking one of our religious education classes to move into the lobby. It would also mean asking our groups to be quiet in the hallways at night. But it would mean that a person or a family would have a little more safety from being sent back to their country of origin that is unsafe for them to return to. And that is the type of spirituality that is not cozy or comfortable, but challenging. And I, for one, welcome that. I have often thought about how the Fellowship community has stayed healthy for so much of our history. In talking with some of those who I would call elders of the Fellowship, those who have been part of the Fellowship for decades, they share that there has always been a vision of thinking big and planning well. We also typically have had good transparency and communication. Of course, there have been challenges when this was not the case. And because of one of those challenging times, we got a beautiful document called Our Principles for a Healthy Congregation, which is listed in your order of service. Since this is only my second sermon here, I can say it's part of my tradition to talk about this document. One of the areas I learned much more about during my sabbatical is congregational polity. Congregational polity is how we are connected to each other. All denominations have this, the beliefs and structures and doctrines that hold us together. Congregational polity includes the covenant that we make to one another. One way to think about covenant is membership in a congregation is like a wedding, but covenanting to that congregation is like the marriage. Our Unitarian Universalist congregational polity goes back to the 17th century with a document called the Cambridge Platform. Unitarian Universalist congregations often have a covenant that members agree to, and some say their covenant aloud at every service. And if the fellowship had a covenant, it would be our principles for a healthy congregation. An interesting side note, I recently learned that there was an intentional decision not to use the word covenant on this document, because all of the founders who were still around in 2001 when this document was written were very against using that particular word. But I would like us to consider claiming it. This is an important part of Unitarian Universalism in my mind. Our covenant is not a contract. It is not to be used to call someone out for non-compliance, but a way to try again. How do we hold true to our core values? How do we continue to evolve and grow? We do this through intention, through loving each other and our community, by allowing mistakes and not giving up. We are all asked not to just read and vote on our mission and vision, but to live these values. I invite you to covenant with me and with each other to live these values fully, to use the principles for a healthy congregation to help us know how to be with each other, to keep learning about white supremacy culture and find ways to combat it, to live a life full of love and radical hospitality when you are at the fellowship and beyond these walls. It is good to be together. May it be so.